The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life with your host, Renee David Alkali. Are you searching for the path to the discovery of wholeness and balance in your life? We'll discuss the future of holistic healthcare and how the concepts discussed on today's show can help you make better choices in your life. Now, here is your host, Renee David Alkali.
Good morning and welcome to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life. We have a snowy, slushy day here in New York. So wherever you are, I hope you have a little bit of sunshine. In today's show, we're happy to have with us as our guest, Eleonora Alea Lupien. Eleonora has an MA in psychology. She's a certified journey and dance facilitator. She's a registered yoga teacher, a founder of Dance of Five Elements and the Illawassee Healing Center, the founder of Alea, Journeys Alea. Born in Belarus, Eleonora lived in New York City for 23 years and is now living and creating and doing her healing work in Peru. Eleonora has trained in spiritual practices since the age of 18. She brings a combination of psychology and spirituality to her work. She has a BA in science from NYU and completed her master's in psychology and spirituality from Columbia University. She has a unique blend in her work of conscious dance, sacred music, tantra, yoga, and shamanism. And this is what she brings to her healing work. It's our great pleasure to have her with us today and to speak with Eleonora Lupien. So, without further ado, good morning, Eleonora, and how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful. Really happy to be here.
Thank you. You know, I looked at some of the material that that you had sent, and it gave me an opportunity to look into some areas of knowledge that I was vaguely familiar with but hadn't really researched, primarily shamanism, even though I probably use some of what the shamanistic practices are in my own work. When I read a little bit more about it, it was really fascinating. Can you perhaps begin by telling our audience, our listening audience today, something about the three areas that you work in, perhaps beginning with shamanism, and how that, or what is shamanism actually in the way that you use it?
Sure. So I feel that right now in my work, while my academic background is in clinical and counseling psychology and in spirituality studies, where I'm finishing up my thesis work at Columbia now, when people ask me what I primarily use, I have to honestly say that it's about just maybe 10-20% of what I learned in school. And then the rest has been from outside education, where I use dance and movement for emotional release, the shamanic techniques, and some tantric techniques, so focusing on the sexual energy and healing for that. And these three areas, I use it all to specialize in emotional release and trauma recovery.
Now, when you staying for a little bit with shamanism, and then we can perhaps look at the work that you do that incorporates or integrates psychology and dance. Shamanism, from what I understand, utilizes techniques where the practitioner goes into some form of altered states of consciousness in order to have either encounter or interact with a spirit world or a spiritual world or a more subtle world, and then acts in some way as a channel. Is that something that you do in your work?
So that's a pretty, it's pretty valid. I'll explain what I do. So there's many lineages of shamanism. For me, I'm trained and continue to have a personal practice and also use with clients from the Peruvian Incan lineage. So similarly to how in the yogic tradition, we focus on the chakras or the energy centers. In the yogic tradition, we have seven major centers. And then there are other ones as well. In shamanism, we have nine because, like, the crown chakra, the top, is divided into two more. So I never say that I take responsibility for the healing that occurs with clients. We serve as a medium through which the healing occurs. So shamanism, we invoke all the elements, nature, is hugely important, and that's our main teacher and supporter in the work. So before beginning any kind of, whether it's ceremony or class or private practice of mine or healing with a client, I always open the direction. What this means is that we give respect and honor and ask for support of all the directions, north, east, south, west, the sky, and the earth. And just like with chakras, there are certain elements that are within each chakra. So if the first one, our root chakra, is the earth element, the second is water, third is fire, and then it goes into air and ether, that's how each direction is associated as well, along with other characteristics, whether it's personality traits, behaviors, and both internal and external factors. So together we open the directions and we ask the support from the mountains, which in Peru and in Quechua, the ancient Incan language, we call them apus for mountains. And they're considered like our grandparents, the wise ones, those who we can get knowledge from. And so we really invoke the support. And what I've learned over the time is to just trust the process and to trust myself and my own intuition, because that's just what happens. It's something to cognitively understand. Coming from psychology, where we want to analyze, and my nature in general is to want to understand everything and to analyze it. And here you just have to drop that whole thing.
And you know, it's so interesting that I think it's so interesting that you brought up the idea that in shamanism and shamanic healing, that the mental focus of a shaman, and certainly in the work that you're doing, is to be as a kind of intermediary and a messenger, or a channel between, I guess, the world that we're in and some a different kind of an energetic world. I think I find that interesting because I've often thought that in the current medical system that we have, you know, doctors have taken this position that they are the healers. And I've often thought that even in the medical system that we have, doctors also, really, if we look deeply enough, are not the healers. They act as messengers in the sense that they give a different kind of medicine, let's say pharmaceuticals, which but actually the healing takes place within the patient themselves, so by some energetic connection. So I find that very interesting that that in shamanism that idea is clearly voiced.
Right. I love that you brought this up, because I also, you know, just having observed my father, he's a neurologist, he's a doctor, so I have this inside look into the medical community and Western medicine, and just having observed the issues that come up. So for me, I notice a lot that there's this victimization, that as soon as, if a patient comes into a doctor and sees them as like the almighty knowledge holder and the healer, they put themselves as a victim that doesn't know anything. And it breaks down the trust that we have with our own body. Mm-hmm. And it seems like in Western medicine, it's like we're taught to not trust our own body, our own insight. Because if we look within, oftentimes we know what's going on. We know where the illness is, what the disturbance is. And also if some doctors get on this, you know, power and ego thing where they feel like, hey, just let me do my work. I've heard this so many times. You know, they're like, I don't tell you how to do your job. Don't tell me how to do mine. And in shamanism, it's very different. And in other healing works where we really see that it's a relationship between the client and the practitioner. And now I'm going to say something that perhaps people that work with shamanism in the States and in the West won't like. But about 35 years ago or so is when Western psychologists started coming to Peru to study shamanism. Mm-hmm. And they began to bring back the tools and writing books and articles and bringing it here. That's all wonderful. However, there is a misinterpretation and things that occur when we try to take these practices out of their natural environment by those who are not from the natural environment. It's like broken telephone, right? So when speaking with the indigenous in Peru and the people that I work with there, they feel like their sacred practices, their medicinal plants are taken and disrespected. Because, for example, you're not allowed to charge money for this kind of, if they use plant medicine, let's say. There's a it's very important to have an exchange, and it's called Aimi in Quechua, which means there has to be an energetic exchange in order to fully receive the benefits of the work. But you don't charge insane amounts of money for this. And now those that are practicing shamanism here, there's so many misinterpretations of it, and shamanism can sound very, very dark, which I'm not saying that there isn't a dark side. We acknowledge that there's light, there's dark in all. But those that actually practice true shamanism in Peru don't even call themselves shamans. They don't want these titles. And here, you have shamans everywhere. You know, somebody took a course for a month, and they're a shaman. Very different.
Well, you know, the word, I did look it up because I was so interested when we had talked about your coming on the show. So I did a little bit of research. Mm-hmm. The word shaman, actually, as a term, so when you say native peoples in Peru or other places may not even like the term shaman, they probably never even used that word, because the word itself actually came from Siberia, from
Siberian shaman.
In the 16th century, when the word shaman was used, I forget by which explorer, but he came in touch with the Tungusic people of Siberia, where they actually used the word shaman, because it came from that language, from the Evenk language of North Asia. And so then it kind of moved to Russia. But so probably the word shaman, even though the practices may be very ancient, certainly very, very old among all native peoples, the word shaman itself is a relatively new addition to the language that came from a particular place. But yeah, we have about 4 minutes before our first break, and you mentioned a couple of things that I'd just like to follow up on, because I know that you have a healing center in Peru.
Yes.
And you're doing work there, which we can talk more about in the next segment of our show. But how? Just curiosity, because you're from Belarus, and then you've lived in New York for so many years. And how did you end up running a healing center in Peru?
Well, let's see if I can do this in 2 minutes, but we might have to continue after the break. But the first time I went to Peru was back in 2007. And it was after the realization that in order to survive in New York City and do what I'm doing, I really need to take a service trip every year. This occurred to me back in 2006 when I went to India and kind of really started to broaden my practices and my perspective and actually planting the seeds for what is being manifested with the center today. And Peru was my trip after India the following year, where I went to work with children, and then I traveled down south. My family came, we went and saw the sacred sites, and I felt a very, very deep connection to the land and the people, and it just felt like this was my soul's home. I've always said that. It's always felt like that. And then I went to the jungle about a year and a half ago and sat with a medicine man and received the message, not from him, you know, from inside of me, from whatever it is that was present at that time, that I need to learn the energetic healing tools of shamanism more in depth. And I was. And then
this was literally a calling.
It was so strong. Because before I went to the jungle, that time for months before then, it was like something heavy was hitting me over the head, just saying shamanism, shamanism, shamanism. And I had no idea what's going on. I'm like, why? What? I was always aware of shamanism, but I never had such a... It was like literally just hitting me with that word.
Well, we
can go into about how there's three ways of initiation into shamanism, and that's one of it. It's definitely, it's an inner calling.
We are going to be taking our break within the next few seconds. We're speaking with Eleonora Lupien, and today's topic is really healing through the integration of psychology, dance, and shamanism. In the next portion of our program, we're going to look a little bit into psychology and dance therapy, and discuss a little more in detail how these are integrated in Eleonora's work in Peru. So please stand by with us, and we'll continue on this topic when we come back.
Be visionary. This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Which voice do you hear? The voice of your ego or the voice of your spirit? The one you listen to can determine your entire future, your decisions, your existence. Listen to Two Voices with Dr. Nick and Reverend Linda Martin. We'll identify, discover, and explore your two voices and help you to determine how they shape your life. It's an experience which can allow you to transform your ego, hear the voice of spirit more clearly, and create the life you were meant to live. Two Voices is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America 7th Wave.
Oh.
Are you looking for better sex? Learn how to have the best sex of your life when you join Ellen Etoff and her program, Ecstatica, the way to an erotic, ecstatic love life. You'll explore every aspect of love, sex, and intimacy, and discover new realms of possibility, including the spiritual dimensions of sex. It's an adults-only world with guest experts sharing valuable tips and techniques and so much more. Cultivate the powerful energies of sexuality and an undefended heart. Listen and join in live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. The Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
You are listening to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life, featuring your host, Renee David Alkali. Connect with the show today by calling in to 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. You can also reach us via email to renee@genesishealthbeauty.com. Now, back to this week's show.
And we're back speaking with Eleonora Lupien on this subject of how the work of shamanism, psychology, and dance can be integrated into a model, a healing model. Eleonora, you were mentioning how you had this calling to be in Peru and how you have a center there. I do want to tell our audience that you also do work in New York when you're back here, and that they can contact you through your website, aleyajourneys.com. That's A-L-E-Y-A, journeys.com. Continuing with the subject, the shamanistic practices, of course, deal with a supernatural world or realms or dimensions to get solutions to problems that may afflict the soul or the community. I know this is traditional shamanism. Yes. And shamanistic beliefs and practices lately, certainly in popular magazines and books, have attracted a lot of interest from scholars in many different disciplines, including anthropology, archaeology, historians, religious scholars, and psychologists. And I know that your formal background is in psychology. So perhaps we'll just move a little bit before we talk about how you integrate these how psychology and shamanism have found some common ground, because when people think about psychology, of course, generally we have this idea of psychology being very much an applied, either an academic or an applied discipline that involves very scientific studies of right. mental functions and behaviors, not dealing with so much with an esoteric world, but dealing very much with what cognitions might be, with perception, cognition, attention, emotion, motivation, you know, very, very measurable phenomenon, you might say. So how do these things make some kind of a marriage for you?
Right. So I'm very passionate and excited about this topic in particular, because it is a passion of mine to integrate more of this kind of work into mainstream psychology and into academia. So yesterday I actually gave a talk, and we went through exercises at Columbia University in their clinical psychology department, because why I did my graduate work there is because there's a spirituality focus within clinical psychology, which is what I focus on. And this is very new, and it's pioneered by Dr. Lisa Miller. So if you want to look into the research within this kind of work, look mm-hmm. into Lisa Miller. And she opened up the Body Mind Institute. She received a huge grant, which is combining spirituality practices, including shamanism, into psychology. And there is, so I'm so happy that things are spreading and evolving in the U.S. for this, because within the American Psychological Association, she chairs the spirituality within psychology section of the APA. And among, there was a study that she did for adolescents that looked at what is the most significant variable to prevent risk-taking behavior. And more than genetics, more than the way that you've been raised, more than your socioeconomic status, more than your culture and ethnicity, the most significant preventative factor of risk-taking behavior, which then leads to depression and other things, was a belief in a power higher than yourself. So spirituality is defined. There's no, you know, we don't look at it in a dogmatic way or in a religious way. It's purely that you hold some kind of belief in a power that's greater than yourself. And this is huge. It was in the Times. It was everywhere. Because imagine, over genetics, over poverty level, that's what creates resilience and prevents risk-taking behavior. So the way that we're integrating, you know, what we did yesterday at Columbia was we did the direction opening and creating sacred space. So it's very important to create safety and security when working in a group or with a client. So here, we involve them. It's not just me saying, you're safe, talk to me. Mm-hmm. It's really, we are participating together in a ritual to create that sacred space. And then we did a drum journey where, again, it's not me doing this, it is you. And they partnered up, and we use a drum for several reasons. One is because it creates a brain wavelength, like as if we were in a meditative state. So it's more conducive for this kind of internal work and relaxation. It is also the sound of the drum. When the mind begins to wander, we can come back to the sound of the drum to bring our attention back to the present. And then we use visualization, so it's like a guided meditation where we go in the underworld, where in shamanism we feel that the ancestors, our teachers, our guides, our allies are in the underworld, and we live in Middle Earth, and then it's the heavens. So we go there, and with the intention to receive some kind of useful information or insight for our partner that would support them and help them with whatever they're going on in their life right now. The reason that we do this with a partner, and preferably one who you don't know well or without emotional attachment, is because when you're first starting these practices and you begin to journey, there's this strong attachment to the desire of wanting information. Like, I want to know this. I need help in this. And the desire is not wrong, but the strong attachment that we sometimes have, or the desperation to the desire, prevents us from receiving information. It acts like a block because the ego is involved. However, if you're doing this for a partner, it's coming from a selfless place where you just want to help and support the other person. And they're really getting to trust their own insights, and we meet allies and people that can help us in the practical issues that we're dealing with. And the director, so Lisa Miller is the director of the program there and conducts a lot of research on this. And it was amazing just to witness what happens in these. It shocks me, you know, every time.
So what I'm hearing, if I understand this correctly, because we know each other for a while, Eleonora, and you know my own interest in psychology, and especially particularly with the model that I work with, which is a CEB, a cognitive behavioral model.
Sure.
Just understanding from what I'm getting from what you're saying is that although psychology certainly began in a certain way as a very empirical model, very using empirical methods to get some causal or correlational relationships, mm-hmm. let's say, between some psychosocial variables, there has been that underlying strain in it. I'm just thinking of Carl Jung with his studies on the mm-hmm. unconscious.
Yeah.
Where there is, and Sigmund Freud, of course, early psychologists or psychiatrists.
Yeah, Jung was very influenced by shamanic work. That's why his work is so much involved with dream space and animals and symbols.
Yes, and I believe he gave 4 major lectures to the Psychiatric Association, I could be wrong mm-hmm. about this, in Vienna, I believe, gave 4 major lectures on Kundalini Yoga. So yes. He was very, very involved with studying that. But this, what I'm thinking is that that there's more of an integration today through the work of Lisa Miller, who I'm not familiar with her work, but bringing into psychology the influences of some of the social sciences, or maybe natural sciences, or the humanities, or even philosophy. So expanding out of this kind of empirical, measurable, some people would call it a pseudoscience, but so it's
right,
kind of expanding
into that. These things. It's something that does not, as I said earlier in the show, especially as psychologists and scientists and researchers, we want to be able to analyze everything. But even when you look at psychology in general, it's very difficult to generalize any kind of research results. It always will say, this pertains solely to the population in the study, and there's no way we can, it's so individual. So mm-hmm. what I always say is there isn't, you know, one kind of prescription of methods or spiritual practices or psychological practices to help someone. It is very individualized. So that's why when I am with a client, I throw every other information out. It's irrelevant. It's what is going to best serve this person in front of me. And, you know, we work together to create a model that will best suit their needs. But I really just, I want to point out the very important factor of having it be a collaborative relationship and empowering the person, not creating a dependency between practitioner and client. You know, so my issue with psychoanalysis, while there are benefits to it, this kind of dependent relationship that can go on for many years about analyzing and overanalyzing creates a dependency. So I don't work long-term with clients. I want them to feel empowered. I give them the tools to do things on their own after we kind of build up their core strengths to be able to do this.
So when you do this, just what happens in a typical workshop that you would do? So let's say some people would be coming to you in Peru or coming here where you're doing workshops in New York or on a retreat in your healing center, and you're presenting certain workshops with a goal of some form mm-hmm. of healing. And a typical workshop, what is that structure?
So, there's a difference between my workshops, which is group work, so we come in with a group, and versus when I work one-on-one with a client. So perhaps I can talk about the workshop when we start about the dance work, because we do a lot of movement work within group classes. My one-on-one, which is when I use the shamanic healing primarily, so clients have to come to me, meaning I don't really advertise my one-on-one work.
Mm-hmm.
My group work, retreats, yes. However, I believe that the client, the person has to find me. If they feel connected, or if they see me, or they meet me, or they take a workshop with me, and they really feel, you know, and this is a gut instinct. It's not based on my diplomas or credentials. it's based on if they really feel like I'm the guide for them, that I can support them. And then I have to feel that I can serve them. If I don't feel it's compatible, I don't take you on because I don't want to waste your time or money or mine.
Mm-hmm.
So if we feel it's compatible, the first session, I listen, and this is as much talking as happens, because I already kind of plug into this meditative state. So you had mentioned how in shamanism we work in an altered mind state or altered consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, like yogis do and others, I come into alignment and into a neutrality. There's no emotions or judgment. And I'm already in the meditative state. So usually I know everything that's going on because I work with the energetic body. So words in that point don't always serve. But I may ask particular questions. However, having the person just speak and let them get it all out helps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before the next session, I have them go through either 1 or 2 weeks of certain self-cleansing practices. So this might be a combination of, I use emotional freedom technique, which mm-hmm. combines working on our fears through tapping on meridian points and affirmations. And then I have them do some, it works. You see, that even my doubt came in at that moment, but some ritual baths where we dedicate each bath to a certain element and for a certain mm-hmm. intention, and then acts as a cleansing. We may discuss if they are on pharmaceutical medication, what the weaning process is onto a more natural, method. And I use some Ayurvedic herbs and plants for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time, now this is what happens. They get their homework assignments and they are to check in with me every day. And every time I get calls, the second day, I feel so much better. The anxiety is gone. I'm not having panic attacks. I slept for the first time in months. It's just amazing. And I say, excellent. Don't doubt it. Don't try to figure it out. Just receive it and keep doing it. And it's all you. I'm not doing anything. It's all you. Always have empowerment. They don't come as a victim. Very important. So by the time of the week or 2 weeks, but they come to me, they're already feeling so much better. And we already start this collaborative healing process with them as the healer. In shamanism, we believe that every person is their own healer. Sometimes if we're really down, we just may need a hand to get us up. But then we mm-hmm. push them on their way. And then the energy work begins. So we focus on trauma release. The same as in yogic practices, they're called samsaras. So the traumas that happen to us prenatally to, the rest of our lives, these cause blocks in
Hold this thought, Eleonora, yeah. because we're coming to the break in 30 seconds, and I do want you to finish this thought.
So
we're speaking with Eleonora Lupien. She can be contacted at eleajourneys.com. And it's a very interesting subject of the integration of shamanism, psychology, and dance. And I think when we come back, you'll be able to finish this thought. And also, perhaps we can talk a little about the dance portion of what you're doing, the movement.
Absolutely.
So please stand by, and we'll be back with you in a few moments.
Invite meaning and inspiration to your life. This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
On the program Inside Out, our outsides match our insides. Join host Beth Green along with co-host James Maynard for an insightful weekly journey that lets us all be real with no boundaries. We'll discuss current events, interview amazing guests, challenge old ideas, and see ourselves and our world more clearly. It's about you as much as us. So you're invited to call in, write in, and most of all, tune in. Listen for Inside Out, live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane, right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
This is the Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are listening to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life, featuring your host, Renee David Alkali. Connect with the show today by calling in to 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. You can also reach us via email to renee@genesishealthbeauty.com. Now, back to this week's show.
We're back with Eleonora Lupien, therapist who has whose work is both in Peru and in New York City, who's done work actually in different parts of the world with an integrative model that she has developed, integrating shamanism, psychology, and dance therapy or dance movement. And we were speaking with Eleonora before we took our break on the work that she does with groups and with individual clients. Eleonora can be contacted at eleajourneys.com, or you can reach out to us and we will happily give you information of how you can be in contact with Eleonora. So we're back with you, Eleonora, and just to finish the thought before we go to any other subject, perhaps you'll finish what you were saying before we took a break, as far as working with individual clients and the journey that that is.
Right, because this this really does integrate with the dance work. So the way that I work with one-on-one with the client, I was speaking about that trauma happens, or in psychology we call it as a possibly traumatic event, because something traumatic can happen, but it will, whether the person becomes traumatized by it or not is on an individual basis. So these traumas, they create blocks in our energetic and physical body, which then causes physical illness, mental illness, and so forth. So we're looking at it from both a biological perspective and a psychological perspective, that all disease is caused by a disbalance in the body, both subtle body, the energy body, and the physical body. So the way that I work is literally going into the energy center, into the chakra. Most trauma is stored in the first and second center, and I remove that trauma. Before I do that, together with the client, we trace back to the original trauma. So the way trauma works, very briefly, is something happens to you at a young age. Super simple example, you're 3 years old, you're in a ice cream store with your mom. You really want that ice cream. Mom says, no, not right now, but you really, really, really want it. And you find yourself in this like deep kind of dissatisfaction and this, oh, I can't get what I want. And that sticks with you and starts to, as you age, it starts to spread into other areas of your life. And then you're 20-something with your partner, and you really want something from them, and you're not getting it. And you are feeling the same way as this 3-year-old in the ice cream store of like, I just want my ice cream, or I just want this attention, or this present, whatever it is. And that root emotion of dissatisfaction is there.
Mm-hmm. So it settles. It settles not only in the mind, but it works itself somehow into the body as well. And is that, yes, would you say, because when I think of dance movement as a form of therapy, of course, it hasn't been around for that long in our Western culture, certainly Native people do all kinds of ritual dance and very expressive dance, and I'm sure many societies even have dance which becomes ecstatic and meditative. I'm thinking of Sufis, for example, with dervish dancing, or Hasidim when they begin to dance. But as a psychotherapeutic use, I think it's only been around since in our society, at least since the 50s, and very much used for emotional or social, behavioral, physical conditions. So what I'm hearing, if I understand it correctly, is this situation you describe, let's say a trauma or a difficult situation, doesn't just work itself into the levels of the mind, but somehow settles into the body and can therefore also be released that way. So when you're, because I know that you do a form of dance called conscious dance. So perhaps you'll address that a little bit. How does conscious dance, which I would put into a psychotherapeutic model, how does that help with emotional release?
Yes. So the same way, it's all based on the chakra system. Now, when you're saying that traumas then manifest physically, it's because if it's lodged in our energy center, like I said earlier on, every chakra, every energy center is associated with a set of organs and functions, and then that energetic trauma starts to affect our organs and functions, and it becomes to manifest as a physical disease, which unfortunately, because we don't have enough awareness in Western medicine with this, people only become aware when it becomes a pretty serious physical ailment. But it started as a trauma, it started as an energetic and, you know, mental, it'll affect the emotional body, the mental body, and then the physical body. So with shamanism, if I use certain tools to open up and, like, shake that energy so that I can go into the chakra, into the energy center, and remove the trauma through dance, we're doing the same thing in a different way. And I'm not directly working on you like I am with shamanism with one-on-one work. So we travel through the chakras and we work with the elements. So, for example, in the dance work, we start on the ground. It's the earth element. We become embodied. We come into the body. We do like a meditation where meditation is one point of focus. You're putting your awareness on, you know, one thing. It could be your breath, fire. Here, we will like massage and touch every part of the body to music. And you're just putting your full awareness. What does it feel like on my toes when I touch them? What does it feel on my fingers when I touch my toes? And we're slowly working our way and waking up the body. Then we go through the water element, second chakra. Then we go into the fire, third chakra, where we'll do a shamanic fire ceremony where you get to release everything that no longer serves. And we need to emote. This work promotes being able to emote, releasing emotion. We in the States, you know, we don't get a chance to just scream and yell, not at someone. You know, screaming that's not directed at someone, which is often what happens because we don't have a release. But just to go out in the woods and scream and run and bang and dance. So especially New Yorkers are quite repressed and need this release. And you don't imagine what happens in these classes in New York City. You can hear them a block away. It's crazy because people really need this release. And then, so when you're working through the water element, and the way that the music is put together is very evocative. So there'll be water elements. It'll be more flowy, you know, more snaky. And it starts, as one of my students said from the last class, it stirs things up and brings stuff up to the surface so that it can be released. Now, I always say it doesn't matter. You don't need to be aware of what is releasing. That's not your problem right now. Just let it come up and get it out. So the process gets things up to a surface, that we're holding and repressing in our system, and then we get to release it. And once you release everything that doesn't serve you, we have space. We have open space. Now, what do we do with open space? Then we begin to question, what does my heart want? What do I really want to manifest and bring into my life? And we work on desire manifestation, bringing our desires into reality. It could be a practical goal. It could be a spiritual goal, whatever the intention might be. And we start to fill this empty space with positive things that we really want to put our focus on. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful process. So not only is it on the physical level, it's releasing toxins. We do things like shaking, which is a shamanic tradition. They'll do this for an entire night. And this kind of shaking process, it's actually been found to help Parkinson's,
mm-hmm.
the symptoms of Parkinson's. If someone with Parkinson's every morning for a half an hour just vigorously shakes, they are still, and they don't have their tremors. It's amazing. It releases the toxins of the lymphatic system. It breaks up cellulite and fat. And the emotional body, we're releasing the pain, the shame, the guilt, getting it out and ritualizing it, because it's, and this shows in studies that when you ritualize something, whether it's you writing down what you want to let go of in a journal, or a gratitude journal, for example, or like a dump journal where you want to get rid of, it helps to make it more real. And on the spiritual level, it's bringing it closer inside. So Alaya, it's a Tibetan word, which means the spiritual home that we always carry within. It's not external. It's not somewhere out there. So these practices bring you in touch with your body, in touch with your heart, having a dialogue with our heart, which we don't do. How often do we say, hey, heart, what do you want? How can I serve you today? What does my heart really want?
But we, you know, in the
which is fourth step,
I'm sorry.
We have to go down.
We don't have to go yet. We have a little bit of time.
We have to resolve the issues of the lower chakras to come to the heart.
Yes. In the time that we have left, because I think you and I could probably, I could keep you on the show for another hour or two, and we probably wouldn't even touch this work. But in the time that we have left, I know that dance therapy and certainly psychotherapy and the shamanism have been used around the world with different populations. I know dance therapy today movement therapy is used, as you said, in nursing homes and daycare facilities, mm-hmm. certainly in all kind of rehab centers. What in the short time that we have left, what can you tell our listening audience, aside from contacting you, which I recommend at alayajourneys.com, what can people start to do at home to look into this and to perhaps do some work or develop some tools that they might use for freeing up some of these energies?
Sure. Well, any kind of meditative practice, meaning something that we're choosing to put our attention on the internal versus the external, will start creating more awareness of what's going on in the emotional body. And you want to pick one thing at a time to work on and then explore. I was trained initially in something called journey dance, and there are teachers all over the country, all over the world in that. See if you can find a class near you. And start to explore. Forget everything I just said. Explore with whatever may be of interest to you. As mm-hmm. I earlier mentioned, it's no one prescription for everyone. We have to go on our journey to find the methods that work for us. If you want to explore shamanism, I can't recommend anyone to you. Mm-hmm. I'm very strict and particular with this, and I think that it's on an individual basis as well. You really need to trust and connect, but please be careful when you go to any healer. and never give your power away to anyone. You're always the one in control, and nobody knows your body and your energetic body and everything better than you. I could only suggest to contact me to continue this dialogue, and I can recommend something on an individual basis. And a great way to see what I do is we have a retreat coming up in April at the center in Cusco. We're 20 minutes from Machu Picchu, and we have 10 days of doing tantra healing, emotional release through tantra and yoga.
We are coming to the end of our show. I strongly suggest to anyone to contact you at alayajourneys.com to continue this discussion. It's been a great pleasure having you. Sorry to have to cut it shorter than it deserves, because it's such a broad topic and such an important topic in mind-body medicine that is currently very much the model that we're moving toward. So we've had Eleonora Lupien as our guest today. Eleonora can be contacted at alayajourneys.com, or you can contact us. Some of this kind of work is done at our own center in Forest Hills, Queens. And go on that retreat to Peru. You'll have a wonderful time with Eleonora, and perhaps we will see you there in Peru as well. Yes. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for listening to our show today. We welcome your questions. Please be in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you.
Mind, body, spirit, living a holistic life. Have a wonderful week. Have a healthy week and a joyous week.
Thank you again for tuning in to Mind, Body, Spirit, Living a Holistic Life. Please be sure to join Renee David Alkali again next Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of the program on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. May you find a better balance in your life this week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.